The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this November 12th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on another gorgeous day in the Auburn Opelika area, and tons to get to on the show this afternoon. You've got us for the next 2 hours here on 106.7. Christian, happy Wednesday, sir. How are you? We're talking an Auburn basketball win.
Yes.
We have more college basketball to talk about, college football to talk about, maybe some baseball in there as well. So happy Wednesday to you, sir.
Happy Wednesday. Yeah, feels like the sports equinox today for our show, as it gets a little bit of everything. I mean, if you really want to, we can talk a little bit of hockey. I don't know how much conversation I could add to that, but
I'm always down to talk hockey, brother.
I can at least look up scores and let you let you do what I usually do with baseball. You're just like, okay, go. You have 45 seconds. But yeah. No, happy Wednesday. It's going to be an incredible show once again. Surprised that your voice is holding on as crossover
dude.
Season, the
it's
definition
trying,
of
man.
It. But Auburn High picks up their first win of the season on the hardwood.
Yeah, had some fun last night at Auburn High, where the boys started off against Prattville, and about four or five of them not playing because of football, which that's just how crossover season goes. But, yeah, had a lot of fun and knocked off some of the rust in terms of broadcasting basketball. And, yeah, between a show and a podcast and play-by-play all over the place, and been sick for about a week, it feels like. I mean, we're holding on for everything we can and trying to get to and through Friday. So that's what we're battling right now.
Yeah, well, thankfully you don't have that far of a drive, so you can spend a little bit more time here at home, make sure that everything continues to get better, and you have everybody very close to you if you need them. But we're talking Auburn basketball here to start the show. As you mentioned, Jacob, picking up a 93-62 win over Wofford. We're also talking more college basketball news, notes from so far this season, some big results last night. And wild to think that, I mean, there were three top 25 matchups on a random Tuesday in November. Getting the season started, getting those early season tests, especially the neutral sites or on the road, where you feel like, again, just based off of all of the metrics, it doesn't hurt you if you go and you lose those games. Some big time matchups, some pretty surprising results in there as well. We'll talk a little bit of basketball, but some football in there as well with Jordan Hill, who's going to join us as he does every single Wednesday at 2:30 of Dogs 24/7. And then in hour number two, yeah, we mentioned it, trying to get a little baseball conversation in there as well. And then the main conversation that we didn't get to yesterday, because I went through my SEC championship rant in football and what my perfect bracket would look like and the automatic bids and the teams playing to make the college football playoff of the SEC. That took up a lot of yesterday's last 30 minutes. And so we'll talk more at 3:30 today about the quarterback situation as a whole. DJ Durkin made more comments on that here this afternoon on the Wednesday teleconference about who is going to start, what redshirting could look like. So we'll give you all of that information here coming up in hour number two.
I know you were joking when you talk hockey and said we could talk about it, but just for fun, my Boston Bruins started 3-0.
I wasn't joking.
They then lost six in a row in pretty horrible fashion, but they've since turned it around. and we have won 8 of our last 9, including 7 in a row. So I don't know how. I don't know why. It's one of the more drunker starts I've seen, but
yeah, but
it's a nice start, and you're right back where you need to be. So,
but look at the Avalanche, and look at the New Jersey Devils and the Montreal Canadiens, as Christian has looked up the NHL standings.
I'm proud of
and
you.
And looking at every team
I'm proud of you.
In the Eastern Conference and Western Conference, the leaders. I'm trying to look. So, okay. I know there's a bunch of people. The text box is blowing up asking questions. 334-784-1067. But the point system, is it 3 for a win, 1 for a tie? Or how
it
does
is,
that?
It's 2 for a win, 1 for an overtime loss, and nothing for a – for a, because there are no ties in hockey because it's a true American sport. They don't tie.
Okay.
You get wins, overtime losses, or nothing.
Or nothing.
You get 2 points for a win, 1 point for an overtime loss, or nothing for a loss. So,
sure.
Yep. So there you go. Anyway, yes, we are talking basketball because Auburn played last night. And looking to build on what they did in Game 2, in Game 3 against Wofford, the Terriers were in town, and Auburn did just that. 93-62, final score for Stephen Pearl and the Tigers. They take down Wofford at home last night. They opened it up quickly, 40-22 at the half. They still outscore Wofford 53-40 in the second half. You were there. I have since caught up and watched the game and highlights and things. And overall, right, scoreboard-wise, this is a good performance for Auburn. You put up 93 points on offense. You give up just 62 defensively. I heard Stephen Pearl talk in the post-game press conference or the post-game radio interview last night on Wings with Andy. He said, you know, not happy that you give up just 22 in the first half and then 40 in the second half, right? Talked about playing 40 minutes of basketball. So he wasn't overly impressed with that. But again, if you are a scoreboard watcher and a box score viewer, this one looks just fine for Auburn.
It does, yeah. 93-62, they covered what was, I believe, the 26.5 point line.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think if you watch the game, I think a lot of the same questions that you have or the concerns that you have about this team, some of them get answered in moments, but I think the still overbearing, the overwhelming questions are still ones to be decided. I think Sunday is going to tell a lot more of that, to tell you where you're good, tell you where you're not, because the number one team in the country and Houston and Kelvin Sampson's defense and offense can do that to you. And I think that's where a lot of the the question marks will get answered either with exclamation points because people answer the call, or it's going to be exclamation points from the standpoint of, oh no, we got to find ways to fix this. 93 points, you shoot 50% from the field, you are 9 of 27 from 3. This was one of those games that I talked about on the way out. I would have loved to have seen a 6 of 18 or 6 of 16 type of game from 3, just because there was no way that Wofford could compete down low. We talked about how young of a team they all are, how younger of a team they are, how they're not a very big team. Their guards do a majority of their rebounding, and so because of that, you should be able to dominate the paint.
As they did in this game.
They very much did, out-rebounding the Terriers 48-27. You also had 20 offensive rebounds, but I still think there was a little bit of settling in there at times. We'll get into that here in just a moment. But I don't feel like this is a team that needs to rely on the three-point line. I feel like when they do, at times they settle in transition, or when you can get 2 feet in the paint and you can kick it out, where you saw a majority of these makes, they turn into really good shots. That being said, when you're able to dominate the two, Auburn took some good mid-range shots, and Auburn had a lot of chances at the rim, which is why they were still able to shoot almost 51%, although it was only 33% from the three-point line. You only shot 18 free throws, which, again, I feel like is more of a health thing, and maybe that's a conversation we can talk about, of not trying to go in and try and out physical a team too much just because you know of what's coming on Sunday. That being said, you cannot get away with that in the Southeastern Conference. You did have 16 assists on 36 made baskets, and so that number is continuing to increase, but that number is going to have to continue to increase if you want to be able to compete in the Southeastern Conference. You had 11 blocks, or 11 steals, 9 blocks, and only had 11 turnovers in there as well. So that number has been very, very good, and you expect with passing increasing with assist numbers, obviously a couple of those turnovers in there as well. There were a lot of live ball turnovers, though, that I saw from this Auburn team that led to either transition threes, transition layups, or at least two-on-one, three-on-two opportunities, a lot of those in the second half that felt like it didn't necessarily matter. Wofford only had 7 fast break points because I think they missed a lot of those open threes in the second half when it came to transition defense. But the biggest thing, yeah, is when you look at it, you're able to say all of those nitpicky things and still come away with a 31-point victory. And I know we'll get into some of the nitpicky things here in just a little bit, but for Auburn, you did what you needed to do, and how nice is it to be able to see the offense, yes, work, but the defense also work to complement them as well.
Which is what Stephen Pearl has talked about, yes, in the first 3 games, right, is challenging them defensively. The players have talked about that. And the idea that you have to get stops on defense before you can go get a bucket on offense, right? Find a body, find a board, and then you can run down to the other end of the floor. Reminder, phone lines are open if you want to be a part of the show and call in to talk about Auburn basketball. You can, 334-321-1390, or you can shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067, which someone just did. Actually, a couple of people just did. I could say peoples, whatever.
I don't think that's completely incorrect.
A couple of peoples just texted us.
I know you can use it in some contexts.
I don't know if
it's that.
Gosh,
we're going
everywhere
today.
Yeah, we are. We're on a hot start in the first 12 minutes of today. And I'm glad somebody texted this, because this is where I was going. Talking individual players, you were kind of talking more as a whole. I wanted to go in to individual players. This guy says that Filip Jovic, who did get the start last night, says he looked so much better. Also says Elijah Freeman is going to be a force in conference play. I will double down on Filip Jovic. He looked a lot more comfortable last night, and maybe that was just because of the size and the advantage he had skill-wise against that Wofford team. Right, 7 points, 6 boards, 2 for 4 from the floor. I think not shooting as much is big for him. He had 3 for 6 from the line. Would like to see more of those go down. But even so, just his presence on the floor looked like he belonged out there. That's what I was worried about in game 2, was there were several times where he would catch the basketball or find himself in a spot and have to look back to the bench and get the call because he didn't know what was going on. And I'm not blaming him. I'm just telling you what I saw. Last night, there wasn't as much of that. So I totally agree with that on Filip Jovic.
We need to get confirmation, too, because the more we hear it,
Jovic, yes.
Is what
I think
we heard
right
last night.
That.
But we were told multiple times and adamantly before he even made his way overseas.
Well, you're right. The broadcast teams have said Jovic, so we'll roll with that until we're told otherwise, I guess. So, Filip Jovic, apologies. But I agree. I think he looked better. I think he looked more comfortable. This texter also says that Elijah Freeman is going to be a force to reckon with in conference play. And I agree with that to an extent. Elijah Freeman last night, 21 points, 5 boards, 3 assists, 2 steals, 1 block. He was all over the score sheet. 7 of 12 from the floor, 1 of 4 from deep, and 6 of 8 from the free throw line. This was a good Elijah Freeman game. I have a worry, okay, and this is just from what I've seen in the first 3 games. I have a worry that the highs are very high for Elijah Freeman, but the lows could be low. Because unlike Keyshawn Hall, because I think there's a very distinct difference here, I think Elijah Freeman still has a little bit of that solo ball, that iso ball, the me ball in him. And I'm not saying it's necessarily a bad thing right now. I'm just saying I think it could become a problem if it doesn't get fixed, because I think he has that mentality, especially coming from where he came from and how he's played pretty much his entire life, is, yeah, get six the ball and get out of the way. That's not how Auburn operates. That's not how this team should operate. And so when Elijah Freeman has a good game like he did last night, absolutely, he's going to make it a long night for some folks. But I'm worried that on the nights that it's not going well, can he pass it up? Can he run the offense? Can he play defense even if he's not one of your leading scorers like he was last night? I don't worry about that with Keyshawn Hall. I have that in the back of my mind about Elijah Freeman.
Well, I think what you're seeing a lot of, and this is, again, getting into the nitpicky stuff, and it'll be something that carries its way into the conversation of Houston, of I think this team has a little bit of the iso ball mentality. The ball seems to stick a lot, and that's been obviously a big conversation. That's why the assist numbers are down. You don't see too many times the ball swinging around the perimeter to find the open shot. It seems a lot more of the set the screen, let me hit the mid-range fadeaway, or let me hit the step back, let me peel around the screen, not dominate and go towards the rim to try and get open. You see a lot of contested shots that these kids, yes, can make, but I think that's kind of the fear right now, is you fear that it could go back to the old Auburns of the past, of where there's times when it feels like the team can't miss, and the rim is gigantic. But then there's also the fear that in SEC play, you could have those 8-minute scoreless spurts. And if you're up by 12, all of a sudden you're down by 4, or you're down by 8, all of a sudden now you're down by 18, and you're having to try and work your way out of it. I am impressed, though, that Elijah Freeman shot the second most amount of shots on the team, but still had 3 assists in there as well. They did a really big job basically trying to take away his right hand in the second half, and he was very willing to pass because he was able to draw double teams. And so I think he'll be one of those guys that you can rely on at any point in time. I wouldn't be surprised if he is the second or third leading rebounder on this team,
and
which
I think
will
he
come
needs
back to
be.
Be
I think
a
he
very
needs
big
to be.
Factor, and
it,
I agree.
And I think he's a really good player. I don't want that to come off for me as a knock against him, that he's not good. I think he's an NBA guy. I really do. But what do they do in the NBA? They play solo ball.
Yeah.
It's ISO. I mean, they just, it's give me the ball and get out of the way. That's how the association works. And so if he can avoid those traps against good teams who will let him do that if he's having an off night, that's what I can see from him from time to time. Tahad Pettiford, still struggling big time.
Yeah.
Shooting the basketball. 9 points from him last night, 4 boards. I do like to see 5 assists. I like to see him passing the ball, even on a night where he's not scoring. I mean, look, man, we all love Tahad, and we know it's going to get there, but it's not working right now. And you can't go 4 of 17 from the floor. I'm sorry. If you're not making shots, quit shooting. That's simple basketball. That's what they told me that back in the 3rd grade, because I couldn't make shots. They said, hey, let's not shoot anymore. Let's pass the ball. I said, you got it. That's what needs to happen right now. And if you're not going to do that, you said this yesterday, get downhill. Get downhill, get to the basket, and get fouled. Because when he gets to the rim or anywhere near the paint, the defense is going to suffocate on him. They're going to collapse on him. You have to. He's too good of a finisher to not bring the extra man, which will then open it up on the edges, open it up to a backdoor cut, or they're just going to whack him and you're going to get put to the free throw line. Where Tahad Pettiford's one of the best free throw shooters in the SEC. That's what he needs to do. But 4 of 17 from the floor, 1 of 7 from deep with 0 free throw attempts, that's not okay for me from your starting point guard.
Yeah, 4 of 13, 4 of 13, and 4 of 17 so far. The shooting splits for Tahad. And so you have the worries about that, again, shooting 28% from the field. I'm not ready to press any sort of panic button yet, because Tahad has always been the guy that's almost overperformed in the big games. And by no means do you want to take a knock on him, but plays very loosely in the games that don't mean as much. And for all you know, these first 3 games, not that he wants to go out and not find the bottom of the net, but you see with the best players in the country, the mentality change of knowing that you're about to go up against this opponent and knowing that Houston is is next on the calendar. You heard Elijah Freeman in the postgame press conference saying that he's already had lucid dreams about playing Houston because of how excited he is. And hearing things like that are really, really exciting for what the team could be, because again, it's one of the most athletic teams in the entire country. And when you're looking at Houston, they are, I guess, more so looking at Auburn, of how the pros can be really good pros, the cons can be really bad cons when you're looking at everything that we've already talked about. Against Houston, weirdly enough, as we have concerns about playing the number one team in the country right now, because they force you to play such individual basketball, weirdly enough, this Auburn team could have success doing that because you have so many guys that can go and beat somebody else one-on-one.
Yeah, that's not a bad point. And Houston plays tonight, by the way, if anybody wants to get a last look at them. They play Oakland tonight on ESPN+. And so good news is, while this will be for Auburn's first big test of the year, it'll be Houston's first big test of the year, too. They've played Lehigh, Towson, and then they'll play Oakland tonight. So not saying that the number one team won't be ready. I'm just saying this will be both teams' first real test of the season. Also want to shout out Caden Magwood, too, before we get to break. He played the best game of his young Auburn career last night as well.
KO did as well.
Yes, KO did. The way I've described Kevin Overton, who I don't know if he'll find his way in the starting five. I doubt it. But
he'll play starting 5 minutes, though, regardless.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is he'll be a starting five contributor. He'll be a type of guy like that who, most of the time, this is the way I've described KO. Most of the time, you won't even notice he's on the floor. You won't even notice he's in the game. But by the time it's over and you get the final stat sheet and you pull it up, you're going to notice that he has 8 to 12 points, 4 to 6 rebounds, 2 or 3 assists, probably a steal, maybe a block, has knocked down a couple free throws. He's going to be all over the stat sheet, but he's not one most of the time that you're just going to be like, wow, there's Kevin Overton. Wow, there he is again. Oh, my God, KO's going crazy. I don't think he's going to be that guy, and that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. He's a down and dirty type of player. Not a bad way, just a gritty type of player. Get after it and plays good basketball.
You feel like he's the type of guy that you don't hear his name a lot, but when you hear his name on the floor, it's because of the right reasons.
It's a big reason.
Yes.
Yeah.
And last night was one of those reasons. I mean, having back-to-back threes, that was kind of his spotlight, but other than that, it was like, okay.
And then he kind of disappeared.
What else did he do? Oh, he had 13. Oh, he had 2 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals.
Yep.
Somebody that just does everything the right way.
Yeah, so this Auburn team's got the talent. They just got to put it all together against good teams. They'll have a chance to do that against Houston coming up this weekend. We'll talk more about that as the show and the week goes on, but we have blown way past our first break, so we need to get to that. We'll talk college basketball and other big results going on around the country when we come back, because we're off and running here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before we take our bottom of the hour break, where then Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 will be joining us. We'll get full updates from Athens on Georgia football, Georgia basketball, and beyond. But speaking of basketball, we had some big games going on last night. Again, I wasn't able to take many of them in just with everything going on yesterday and then calling my own basketball for Auburn High. But Duke decided to go on the road and you know, do bad things to our nation's military on the hardwood. On Veterans Day of all days, they said, you know what, Army, we appreciate the invite. Here's 114 points that we'll bring along with us. I mean, that was wild to see.
It was. It was a really cool pregame and everything that took place.
I saw
place.
Some social media it clips
was,
from it.
It was really cool, and not that that's what you hope for, but that was halfway the expectation for them to be able to watch really good basketball.
Yeah, so Duke does that. Michigan, the sixth-ranked team in the country, at home, had to fend off Wake Forest in overtime, where the teams combined for 9 points.
in overtime.
I didn't even see that. I remember seeing that it went to overtime. Yeah, Wake Forest outscores Michigan 46-33 at home. Dusty May, Yaxwell Lindenberg. We won't talk about his previous team. Yeah, we will. Alabama State beat UAB last night. Yeah. Andy Kennedy. Whew. What you doing there, down there, brother?
Yep. Whoops.
Top 12 matchup, probably the biggest game, the highlight of the weekend, and or the highlight of the week, and it showed out number 9 Kentucky and number 12 Louisville, and what is a in-state big-time rivalry. It's so nice that both of these teams are good in basketball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, you feel like just college basketball as a whole is better when they are good. And my goodness, did this game deliver? I watched the Auburn game, and I watched this game on my computer sitting in the media section. Louisville beats Kentucky 96-88, a big-time first half for Louisville. Put up 53 points, and we're able to go point for point with Kentucky in the second half. Continue on, Florida State misses a three-quarter heave in the swamp. Florida escapes 78-76. Didn't watch too much of that game, but I saw one stat on here that I wanted to just about how dang good Florida is at rebounding.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're going to be the best rebounding team probably in the SEC.
If not, maybe the entire country. Chinyelu had 16. Thomas Howe had 13. And Alex Condon had 6. Like, it's team is really, really good. Texas Tech's game-tying 3 gets blocked in the final seconds. Illinois wins 81-77. And Creighton doesn't have any of their seniors they had last year. They're overranked. Gonzaga absolutely rolls.
Yeah. Back to Kentucky Louisville on our way out here. If you don't know the freshman Mykel Brown Jr., probably should. He's one of the best in the country. He had himself a night. He dropped 29 last night on Kentucky in Louisville. So college basketball, it's back, baby, and we are so excited. We'll talk about that with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, see what Georgia's up to on the hardwood and what they think about the latest playoff rankings. That's coming up next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us here as we are halfway through hour number one. And we get to the phone lines as we welcome in our usual Wednesday 2:30 guest, a guy who covers the Georgia Bulldogs better than anybody with boots on the ground in Athens. We got our man Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 joining us now. What's going on, man? Crossover season is in full swing, and I'm sure your sleep schedule is not normal, if I had to guess.
Yeah, something like that. Basketball with 3 games in the first week, football with a trip to Mississippi, but hey, we wouldn't have it any other way, and the bright side is might have a little less sleep, but we have no shortages of stuff to talk about today.
Well, I assume for you, Jordan, I know you travel to most, if not all, football games, but then for basketball, will you make the road trips for SEC games too?
It just depends on the game, and honestly, it probably depends on the season Georgia's having. I usually will make the trip to South Carolina because it's a pretty easy drive. I always make the trip to Auburn. But if they're playing frisky, then we might work in a trip to Lexington, a trip to Knoxville and the like. It just depends on how they wind up playing.
Well, we'll talk some Georgia basketball on our way out of today's interview here in just a little bit. But, of course, the talk of the town in Athens continues to be football because after the loss to Alabama, Georgia has done nothing but win. They've ripped off 5 in a row against Kentucky, Auburn, 5th-ranked Ole Miss, scary one against Florida, and then an impressive win over Mississippi State, 41-21 this past weekend. Break it down for us, if you would, on what Georgia did well, what they didn't, the fact that they were trailing after the first quarter and the second quarter dominated by the Dogs in red and black, and they walk out of Stark Vegas with a 20-point win.
Yeah, a lot of people looked at this game as a potential trap game for Georgia and kind of felt like it might be at the beginning. Mississippi State opens the game with a 75-yard touchdown drive, and Georgia winds up having to settle for a field goal. But really, from the close to the end of the first quarter on, it was all Georgia. Georgia puts together a really strong stretch where they outscore Mississippi State 38-0 before Mississippi State winds up getting on the board again. I think that was late third quarter. Defense did a great job of pressuring Blake Chapin. I actually wound up hitting him at one point and knocking him out of the game, and Kamario Taylor had to come in the game. And really the story of Saturday was the offense, and specifically the run game. They wound up eclipsing 300 rushing yards on the ground. Nate Frazier had a career day, 181 rushing yards and a touchdown, that touchdown being about a 60-yard run. And, you know, as frustrating as it's been, we've continued to see this Georgia defense give up touchdowns on opening drives. They continue to lock in and play really well. And it was one of those games on the whole, I don't know that you could ask for much more realistically. Having to go on the road, that was an 11 a.m. local kick. Thought maybe there'd be a little bit of a sleepy start. There was somewhat of that, but Georgia shook it off, took control, had a fantastic middle eight of this game that really opened the door and put them in the position that they've not been in very often this year. They were able to take control, work in some backups in the fourth quarter, and ease into another victory.
Ease into it over the Mississippi State Bulldogs on the road. You now go back home between the hedges to take on 10th-ranked Texas. This was a game last year that had all of the buzz in Austin, and it didn't matter if it was Quinn Ewers or Arch Manning. The Dogs found a way to get a big-time win despite so many controversial calls, despite a bunch of replays that didn't necessarily go the Dogs' way. Georgia found a way to get the job done. What are you seeing from this Texas team coming up this weekend that could pose a little bit of a scare, and how does Georgia try and counteract that?
I think it's really interesting that the Texas Longhorns are coming into this game off of a bye week, and it seemed like, you know, with what they did against Mississippi State and what they did against Vanderbilt, you know, they got a little bit of momentum, especially on offense, and just really interested to see how exactly they try to attack Georgia. You know, you look at some of the games where they've had early success recently. Been a lot of opportunities for Arch Manning to throw the ball at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage and allow guys to make plays. And, you know, you wind up getting an explosive play out of a short little throw. You're going to take those all day. What I really want to see on Saturday, what I think is going to be a key into who winds up winning this game, it's going to be the run game for both teams. Georgia, like I said, wind up with 303 on the ground against Mississippi State. They're not going to have that kind of success, but they've really leaned on opponents. They've really made it hard on opponents to get them off the field with their run game. I mean, the third and fourth quarters of games, Georgia has really just tried to wear out defenses by staying on the ground. I think they're going to try to do that, but this Texas defense is second in the nation, only to Texas Tech in terms of rushing yards allowed per game. And then on the other side, something that's really been a struggle, even as Texas's offense has kind of found its footing, really struggled to run the ball. And last year against Georgia, really in both games, regular season game and the SEC title game, Texas just could not get the ground game going. I think that a very easy tell on who wins this game is going to be who runs the ball better. If Georgia's able to, you know, they're not going to hit 300. I feel pretty confident about that, but they can be consistent. If they can move the chains over and over, relying on that ground game, I think that sets up very well for Georgia to defend the home field and be able to hold off Texas.
We're talking with our man Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 here on ESPN 106.7. And I want to ask you a two-part question, but the second part first, and it'll make sense when it all comes back together. How much stock do you believe, given what we've seen in the first two college football playoff rankings, how much stock do you think the committee is putting into the season finale between Georgia and Georgia Tech? With it not being a conference game, should be top 25, right? Georgia Tech fighting to get in as the second team from the ACC. How much stock do you think the committee is putting into that game for the winner and the loser? And then I have a follow-up to that.
Yeah, no, I think quite a bit just with where both of these teams are ranked. And I think really it's more so an opportunity for Georgia Tech, given sort of what the ACC is looking like right now. If I'm remembering correctly, I think Miami's the highest ranked ACC team at this point.
Yeah.
So to me, I think it's more an opportunity for Georgia Tech. But you know, even starting with this week against Texas, I think with the number of SEC teams that are in the mix, you know, Georgia might find itself in a very complicated situation if it drops any of these games. I think they would probably be in a better position if they drop Georgia Tech than Texas. But it's one of those, I think it's very easy for Georgia to just focus on the task at hand, because a loss to Texas and all of a sudden I think that Georgia Tech game is a must win. You may even need more help besides that.
Well, that gets into my follow-up, which I'm sure you were able to pick up on, is could we consider Georgia-Texas this weekend a play-in type of game for the college football playoff? Because here's what's fascinating, is these two teams come together in a top 10, top 15 matchup, but both teams, Georgia and Texas, both have another top 15 team opportunity, right? Georgia has Georgia Tech, Texas plays Texas A&M, and so this win would propel you for sure, but you still have another team to beat. But you could look at it the other way, Jordan, and say, well, if you lose this game, you have another opportunity to prove yourself. Where do you put this game between Georgia and Texas in terms of the college football playoffs, where the winner and loser stands?
Just given the fact Georgia has Georgia Tech left, I don't know that a win on Saturday necessarily guarantees anything for Georgia. I do say this. I think if Texas loses this game, that might be it. Just with that Florida loss, I think if they were to lose three games and one be that loss to Florida, I think that might be too much for Texas to be able to overcome. Even if they beat what looks like will probably be an undefeated Texas A&M team at the end of the regular season. So it's hard for me to say for sure, like, yeah, this is a win or get in for either team.
Sure.
Mainly with Georgia still having Georgia Tech. But I think if Texas walks off the field on Saturday with a loss, they're going to need a whole lot of help. I don't know that I'd say eliminated, but I think a lot of it is taken out of their hands. And you never want to be in a situation where you're relying on other results to get you back into the mix.
Jordan, any big injury updates? I know that there were a couple minor injuries later in the game against Mississippi State. Lawson Lucky, one of them, Drew Bobo in there as well. And then Colby Young still battling a little bit. If not, is he out for a majority of time? And then is there any other injury news that Georgia fans should be aware of?
Yeah, I don't know that we're going to see Colby Young back maybe at all. It probably will take a playoff run for him to be able to come back. Lawson Lucky, it seems like all things are looking pretty positive after he had a really scary hit against Mississippi State. We'll have a better idea of that on Wednesday night when they put out the availability report. Other than that, Drew Bobo had a laceration on his hand late in that game against Mississippi State. I think he could have gone back in if he needed to, but he's been able to practice this week. He's good to go. And really the only other injury situation we're really watching, DeMello Jones, he injured his elbow against Florida. I went through pregame warm-ups on Saturday against Mississippi State, but was ultimately held out. I think that was sort of a precautionary move. I think they felt like they could get by without him, and not risk, further risk injury there. So we'll see his availability on Wednesday. I think DeMello will be available for this Texas game, but he's a guy that, though he does not start at cornerback, he has played quite a bit. He's pretty regularly rotated in between he and Ellis Robinson. So DeMello's a name to pay attention to once that first availability report comes out.
Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 on the phone lines here with us during On the Line on this Wednesday afternoon. And we were talking so much of Georgia Tech on the football field. How about an undefeated matchup on the basketball court coming up in just a couple of days? That's on Friday night, right? Between Georgia and Georgia Tech coming up, as both the Jackets and the Dogs, both 3-0. And Georgia, for people that have not looked, that offense is humming right now. 104 points, 94 points, and dropped 120 on Morehead State. I know it's not the toughest of competition, Jordan, but that offense is looking a lot of fun there in Athens.
Yeah, they've passed every test to this point, but this will be the biggest one Friday night. 9 p.m. Eastern time, 8 p.m. Central. I'm going to have to probably drink a little coffee or something to keep myself up for this one. But, yeah, biggest test yet. I think this is a situation with Georgia that they've pretty much passed all the tests, and the offense has looked really, really good. I'd have to shout out Jeremiah Wilkinson, the Cal transfer that has really lived up to expectations. He had 22 against Morehead State. Guy that's really impressed, I think, even, with the last name, Jake Wilkins. Dominique Wilkins' son has been very impressive, had 15 against Morehead State, had a windmill dunk that they're still talking about here in Athens. They like what they've done so far. I think the biggest thing on Friday against Georgia Tech, just take care of the basketball. That's been a big area of emphasis with Mike White and this new group. They've done it so far. They've done a great job as far as assist to turnover. But if you do that, if you shoot as well as you did against Morehead State, particularly from three, because that has been an issue in some of these early games, I think Georgia will be in perfect position to get the 4-0 and get another big rivalry win over Georgia Tech.
I mean, it sets up just about perfectly, does it not, Jordan, with a home basketball game Friday night against your rival Georgia Tech the night before a home football game at night against Texas? I mean, I would expect that crowd to be relatively packed out there at Stegman Coliseum, no?
No, I think for sure. I think with Texas just right around the corner, but even two, you know, this is a big in-state rivalry. I think it's enough, especially with how Georgia's playing. Get the folks into town, but it sets up well, like you said. If you're going to the Texas game, hey, let's get there a night early, go watch Georgia. You know, the fans hopefully want to see a big home win. And I'll say this, Georgia's style of play this year, man, it's really exciting. I hope if folks are listening to this, if they want to follow along, if they like Georgia athletics, pay attention to this men's basketball team, man. They've been fun to watch so far.
Well, you'll have a big weekend in Athens covering both for Dogs 247, and we're always grateful for you and your time joining us each and every Wednesday here on the phone lines. Jordan Hill with Dogs 247 covering Georgia football and basketball and beyond. Tell the folks where you're at, what they can get, and how they can get in touch with everything you're doing before a big weekend there in Athens.
Definitely, dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at dogs247. And, yeah, I'm actually about to head over to Stegman Coliseum to talk to Mike White and a couple players getting ready for this one. We'll have all kinds of preview stuff for that. Obviously, previews for the Georgia Tech game on Saturday night. We'll have our podcast, Junkyard Dogcast, fired up 12 p.m. Central on Thursday. Orange 24/7's Eric Henry is going to join me, and we'll talk about a top 10 matchup between Georgia and Texas. So very busy time, very fun time, though. We hope folks that are listening that they'll follow along with us over on the Junkyard and get ready for, like we were just talking about, big weekend for Georgia athletics. I think it'll be an entertaining one as well.
Yep. Enjoy that, my friend, and we'll talk to you again next Wednesday right here, okay?
All right, sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much. Jordan Hill, Dogs 247. Check him out on dogs247.com for all of the insight on Georgia football, Georgia basketball, and beyond. And Christian, before we get to break, you and I were talking about this Georgia team before we got him back on the phones. And we had talked to him about the Georgia basketball squad and asked him what his expectations were going into the season.
Yeah.
And he said he expected them to maybe take a step back from a year ago just because they lose a couple of guys, some big name guys as well, but man, through three games,
otherwise, man,
I think I'm the same way. I think you and I are in the same boat. It was like when we got him off the phone that day, it's probably been about a month or so ago when we talked to him then about the preseason and things. It was like we were both kind of shocked that that was his mentality, and maybe that's changed in the first three games. But I mean, man, I know it's Bellarmine, MD Eastern, and Morehead State. I get that. But dropping 104, 94, and 120 points is pretty ridiculous. They also have only given up 59, 29, and 81. Like, I think that Georgia team is talented, dude. I think they are a sneaky team in the SEC.
It's just one of those, another one of those teams that has all of the athleticism. And when you have Mike White as your head coach, you're
in for a fight.
You might find a way to lose a couple games you shouldn't, but you're also going to find a way to win a couple games that you probably shouldn't as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's a team that is on your SEC basketball schedule that you cannot overlook. That is not a gimme win. That's not a sleep-through win. That's not a, oh, all right, it's just Georgia on Saturday. Oh, wow, that's fine.
Yeah, we finally got one.
Yeah, we got Georgia coming to town on Tuesday. We're good. No, that's like, huh, crap. We just came off a bruiser against Tennessee. Now we got to go to Athens.
Yeah.
Again, oh God.
This could be another one of those teams that Auburn looks at and is very, very happy that you got at least one of those games very, very early on in the season. That being said, it's at Stegman Coliseum
for your SEC opener. Yeah, is what Auburn does. So Georgia Tech's kind of in that same boat. They've played MD Eastern also. Funny enough, Georgia beat that team by almost 70. Georgia Tech beat them by 4. So that was in the opener, though. So we'll kind of put a little asterisk next to that. Georgia Tech beat Bryant. They also beat Southeast Louisiana. This will be a good test for Georgia. I think they win that game, though, against Georgia Tech. But regardless, that'll be a fun game. Friday night there in Stegman Coliseum. Okay, we'll take a break. Come back. We will wrap up the hour, get into hour number two. We will see what's going on with Auburn baseball. I know Butch Thompson talked with the media earlier today. We were unable to get there, but we'll see if some of that is up and may have some of that for you. Plus, we'll talk the quarterback situation that DJ Durkin spoke on again today. We'll wrap up hour number one and get into hour number two right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. We've got about 60 seconds until we are out of here for the first hour. Coming up in hour number two, we're going to start with some quarterback talk for Auburn football as that continues to be a conversation, but for different reasons now, which is fascinating, and we'll see what DJ Durkin, Derek Nix, and the Tigers decide to do in a bye week, of course, right? But trying to figure that out and what you do the last two games of the season. So we'll start the hour with that, plus whatever else is on your mind. Talk some more college football things. Playoff rankings came out last night. We can always get into that as well. So should be a very fun hour number two. And shout out to Hayden Harper over at Lee Scott Academy, who is now a Troy Trojan, a guy that I called when I started play-by-play as an eighth grader. He was, and now it's crazy to see him as a senior now at Lee Scott on the basketball team. Signed his NLI today to play basketball down at Troy. So shout out to Hayden Harper, man. What a kid.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really fun to be able to watch him play his senior year at Lee Scott this year. He's a heck of a kid, a heck of a player.
It's a great family too, man.
It is.
Love those guys.
And he's going to be one of those dudes at the mid-major level.
Yeah, right? Yeah, he's going to be a lot of fun. So National Signing Day across the nation. So shout out. I know a lot of guys and girls around here got their letter signed today, but him being one that you and I both have ties to, so shout out to Hayden Harper signing his letter of intent to go down to play basketball at Troy. All right, hour number one is in the books. Stick around. We're talking quarterbacks coming up in hour number two.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us, and hopefully you've been here the whole time. But if you're just now able to tune in, we appreciate you nonetheless. And if you missed the first hour, you missed a good one as we talked Auburn basketball as they won last night against Wofford. So we talked about that, talked a little high school basketball as well, also talked about some other games around the college game. And then we had Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 join us to talk all things Georgia football and Georgia basketball. So that was in hour number one. If you missed it, you could check it out on our station website and the podcast center at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we get to talk a little bit of quarterbacks. And funny enough, you feel like you get your starting quarterback, and now you have discussions about who's going to be the starting quarterback in a couple of weeks when Auburn takes the field against Mercer. It's the never-ending story, even when things go good for a quarterback. It just changes things just a little bit, but we'll talk about that. We'll talk about some of the quotes that DJ Durkin had in the teleconference, as well as they try and prepare for Mercer and for Alabama here over the next couple of weeks. That coming up in hour number two, we'll talk college football playoff rankings as those were released yesterday as well. Had a little bit of discussions about what we could see. Some of the things did come true. Others stayed the same as we would have imagined as well. And anything that you would like to talk about as well here in hour number two, the phone lines are open for all of the second hour at 334-321-1390. Any quick hitters, any questions? A text box is always open at 334-784-1067. And like I said, to start hour number two, as good as things go, they can all stay the same as well. Because Ashton Daniels was named the starter the past couple of weeks and looked really good in the brand new offense at Vanderbilt. And now you're having discussions if he's going to be the starter for Mercer, but not necessarily because of anything negative?
Yeah, I mean, it... They're legitimate conversations, okay? They are, because they had started to trickle out a couple of weeks ago when Hugh Freeze was almost let go and then let go. There were conversations about, okay, who should be starting? Who do we want to start? And then now that we're getting into the last few games of the season, then that little red shirt thing starts coming around. That old red shirt tag, that old red shirt slang starts to come out, and you have to have those legitimate conversations, right? And that's pretty much where Auburn is at this moment. So I want to open this up to our listeners. Again, phone lines are open, 334-321-1390, or the text box at 334-784-1067. I assume that this is a pretty heavily weighted question in terms of the answers we're going to get. But part one is, who do you want to see at quarterback moving forward? I understand it's a bye week, right? So Auburn has an extra week to think about it, an extra week to figure it out. But who do you want to see at quarterback for the last two games against Mercer and Alabama? Do you want to see Jackson Arnold? Do you want to see Ashton Daniels? Or the other possibility is Deuce Knight, who, yes, is still on the football team and still in the quarterback room, because now you're entering a situation where you can play him and not burn his red shirt, Christian, and also potentially save it for Ashton Daniels. So there is a legitimate conversation and argument and discussion going on about who gives you the best chance to win, who deserves to play, or what do we want to do and basically manipulate the system to where in a broken season that really can't become anything anyways, do we just play a sample of all three and play for next year, basically?
Yeah, the discussion too is not necessarily for Alabama, because I think Ashton is going to get the start against Alabama because Ashton's only played in three games. So if Alabama is his fourth, he could still redshirt. It's more of the, do we see Ashton Daniels as a big piece of our future next year? Could he be quarterback one next year after seeing the steps of improvement after what you saw against Arkansas, what you saw a little bit against Kentucky when you had time to throw or do whatever you were supposed to do inside Jordan Hare, not at him because of the play calling. But then you see Derek Nix take hold of the offense, and you see Ashton go 31 of 44, 350 yards, completed 71% of his passes, threw for two touchdowns, also ran for two touchdowns, and had 89 rushing yards in there as well. He has played in three games, so you would imagine he will get the start in the Iron Bowl, but if you see him as a piece possibly for next year, then you feel like the best thing to do is you allow Deuce to play against Mercer. You allow Jackson to play against Mercer. That way, if you want to have a quarterback battle, if it wants to be Deuce Knight, Ashton Daniels, and whoever the head coach brings with him, you can have that three quarterback race rather than simply saying, Ashton, we appreciate your time and thank you for everything you've done, but sorry. There's your five games and there's your college career.
And that's business. I mean, that's that. It's tough if that's the direction they go, right? And think about this.
And he was one to say early, sorry to cut you off, before the Arkansas game when they were having major discussions. This was back even when Hugh was saying, we were planning on redshirting Ashton all year long. That's now out the window. We're going to put who we think can win on the field. And they asked Ashton about it, and he said, honestly, I haven't given it much thought. If the team doesn't need it, I'll happily take it and come back next year. If I need to go play on the field, I will. I'll do whatever the team needs me to do.
Which I feel like was his mentality when he transferred here from Stanford in the first place.
It was.
Was it not?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that's what he said is like, yeah, I'll redshirt, back up, start, do whatever they want me to do. I just want to be at Auburn.
Yes.
I just want to be closer to home and have the off-field ties and things like that. But, man, put yourself in the situation right now of DJ Durkin and Derek Nix. I mean, that's not an easy decision to make. You're talking about the futures of several young men and what their eligibility is and how much more or little they can play college football. That's heavy. That's a heavy burden, which is why when we're talking about all these conversations, right, about head coaches and who wants to be one and who doesn't want to be one, these are the things that some people don't want to deal with. These are the things that head coaches have to do, is make these decisions of,
yeah,
hey, sorry, man, we're going to burn that red shirt. We need you to start for us in this weekend because Mercer's 8-1, and then we want you in the Iron Bowl for a chance to win, and we know we didn't pick you as our guy to start, but can you bail us out now? And that season's gone. Sorry, man. Like, that's a tough decision to make.
And even more so tough for DJ Durkin because he might be affecting something that he might not have true control of next year. He's making head coaching decisions that he might not even be – you hope he's still a part of the team, but may not be at worst on that side of the football next year, making those true decisions on who's going to be that quarterback. If you want it to be – Deuce Knight and you fully expect him to be the future starting next year, or if it is Ashton to give some sort of battle, so many different scenarios that you can go about everything.
I compare that to like politics, right? When a politician, a president or a senator or something like that gets removed or retires or steps aside or whatever the case may be, and somebody steps in their place for like 2 or 3 months and makes decisions, and then somebody else permanently gets put in their spot. That's exactly what's happening here. And you're right, to where you can't think that way, but we can talk about it that way because that's what it is. And so what would you do? That's the question, right? That's what everybody's discussing, is just like the old show that used to come on. Was it ABC?
What would you do?
Did you ever watch that show?
I did.
That show was awesome. I don't know how real it was, now looking back on it, or how much. I don't think it was overly staged.
No, I don't think so.
That was a great show.
Other than like the overdramatics of walking out of the room and going and surprising the guy that...
yeah, breaking out of the car and running into the restaurant. Yeah.
But all the security camera. I mean, again, I think...
The cameras everywhere, and they would send in an actor to basically act like a jerk in public and see if somebody would step up and say something about it. Great show, by the way. But what would you do, right? Let's put ourselves... and this is open to our listeners. 334-321-1390 or the text box at 784-1067. It's the bye week. You are DJ Durkin. You bring in your quarterbacks. You bring in Derek Nix. Which, side note here, do we know how much input Derek Nix had on choosing the starting quarterback in the first place? Do we know how much of his opinion was taken when Jackson Arnold was recruited here, paid to be here, and then named the starter? Because he hasn't sniffed the field since Freeze was fired. Hasn't sniffed it. And so, I don't think that's even a possibility is Jackson Arnold playing in any more football games? I don't think. So sit on that for a while and think about how much of a disaster that probably was. But I open this up. What would you do? You're in a bye week. You're preparing for an 8-1 Mercer team and then the Iron Bowl, both at home, to wrap up your regular season. A season that, if you win out, you'll win a bowl or you'll go to a bowl game, right? But other than that, you don't have a whole lot to play for other than your fans, your home field, and your recruiting.
And weirdly enough, it might be at the point of where this sounds so
you would.
Negative to say,
you would.
But you'd be fine not going to a bowl game because it meant that you could hire a head coach and immediately turn the page.
I was just going to say, yeah, decline it. I mean, you could decline the bowl invite.
If
Auburn did that, didn't Auburn do that the last time?
Yeah.
In between Malzahn and Harson, am I right?
I think they were one of like the
– or was it Harson DeFreeze?
They were one of like the few 5-7 teams that got the bid
yeah.
and declined it. But
5-7, I forgot. So, yeah, so there you go. Yeah, so what would you do? You have three quarterbacks, two games, and two
– and a red shirt on the line.
Yeah, one. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So
because Deuce could play in both of them and still only play in three games.
Right. Three games, two quarterbacks, one red shirt. What do you do?
I thank myself that I'm not DJ Durkin right now for having to
you're telling me.
Make that decision and throwing it even more into the fire. If DJ Durkin truly does want the head coaching job, obviously you want to go with what will make the players happy because you don't want to screw over a kid. And if your question is to me, I would ask Ashton. But that's obviously much easier said than done of, hey, do you want to be redshirted? Do you want to be here next year or play college football? Or are you ready to move on? I think that's one way that you can go about it. But at the same time, if you're DJ Durkin and you want to go with that, but you don't feel like Deuce Knight is completely ready and you're wanting the head coaching job, you can't go out there and win a 3-point game over Mercer. Because the fan base won't buy that. The fan base won't use that as any sort of momentum towards you being named the head coach. Now, if he comes out here to start Monday's practice and says, you know, Derek Nix is going to take control of the offense, I'm going to go back to doing what I can on the defensive side of the football because that's where my priority is, and I don't want to be a head coach. And again, that's all part of a story, not saying that's what we – one, not saying that's the case, but how much more simple that would make everything in this conversation of, I'm going to let them control everything. I'm going to be the defensive coordinator. That way, none of my decisions seem as if I'm trying to win over a job.
Yeah. I don't love that, though. I don't love that. That almost seems like you're running away from the not you, I'm saying that would almost come off as DJ running away from the responsibility of what the head coach is.
Sure.
Which, again, it's a tough spot to be thrown in as the interim head coach for the last month of the season where all these tough decisions have to be made. But at the end of the day, right now, DJ Durkin's job is to win football games as the interim head coach. And that starts with Mercer. And so you've got a game plan for Mercer. You've got a game plan for Alabama.
You go ahead.
Well, then I was going to say, and then at what point do you start thinking about next year? As you've brought up several times with the possibility of Ashton Daniels, the possibility of Deuce Knight, and don't forget Peyton Falzone, the freshman who's still committed to Auburn to play the 4-star quarterback out of Pennsylvania.
And again, much less whoever the next head coach brings in with him.
Correct.
Another weird thought that I don't know how well it would work, but it wouldn't ultimately surprise me if they tried to go this sort of route, which you don't necessarily work on with everybody, but if you went with the quarterbacks and
three quarterback system, got it. Boom.
Correct.
Three quarterbacks, yes. They all play.
Drive by drive, and it's just worst case scenario all across the board.
It worked great against Clemson. I think
it
we
did.
Should do it again.
Yeah. Especially with like after a touchdown drive, it's okay. Your turn to see if you can match that.
Nicely done. You're up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Heads or tails? No, but
rock, paper, scissors.
Imagine it'd be a really weird scenario. And I don't think that this would work, but it's you walk out on Monday and you name Deuce the starting quarterback for Mercer, but you give Ashton 2 weeks to study Alabama.
Yeah.
Not the entire offense, because obviously you still have to go out and execute your plays, but you almost mentally have it where Ashton is taking number two reps because everything that he does mentally is preparing for what Alabama is going to bring you.
Would you have him? So you would have him as the number two in case it didn't go well for Deuce Knight against Mercer? Because, you still have to win that game.
Then if that's the case, I mean, I don't play Ashton against Mercer.
At all.
I would go Jackson or Deuce.
He doesn't touch the field no matter what happens.
If you lose the game, it doesn't hurt any more than the season's already put on you, in my opinion. Yes, would that be the final kick to the you-know-what?
Mm-hmm.
But the season's done it enough already.
Yeah, that's fair. And so you're doing that from the protection of Ashton Daniels' standpoint and getting Deuce Knight reps' standpoint, I assume?
I guess so, yeah.
Because, I mean, we've got people texting us right now saying they would play Deuce Knight just to see what he's got. I mean, just to get the guy out there.
Yeah.
Just to see, other than the half of football he played in week two.
Give him 2 weeks of preparation, control the offense, and you go.
I feel like that scenario, they would do that silently. I don't think if you're DJ, come out.
Oh, no, you would not work out there and say, Ashton's not going to play. We are going with Deuce and then Jackson, or Jackson and then Deuce, and we are giving Ashton 2 weeks to prepare for Alabama.
But you're saying internally that could be a game plan.
I wouldn't hate it.
I don't think I would hate it either. I don't.
It'd be a weird way of going about it, because there would be a little bit of a disconnect with Ashton and the rest of the plays for that week against Mercer. But if you go to the standpoint of Ashton, you're not doing any sort of prep, any sort of film on Mercer. You can let these other guys study what Mercer's defense does. Ashton, you have 3 weeks.
Yeah.
All the bye week, the Mercer week, and then the week leading up to the Iron Bowl. You have 3 weeks to sit down with the entire offense and figure out what you want to do, the game plan that you want to have, and the Derek Nix can give you to where there's some sort of confidence working your way to where there shouldn't be any sort of confusion.
I want to keep talking about this when we come back, because there are a lot of different ways you could go with this, and we've got several opinions coming in the text box at 334-784-1067. You can give us a call as well at 334-321-1390. What would you do if you were the interim head coach right now? Who starts at quarterback for Auburn against Mercer, and who starts against Alabama in the Iron Bowl? We continue this conversation right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we continue on with a, I guess, question of the day. Haven't done one of those in quite some time, but I would say this is a question of the day. It's more of a question of the week and month and question of the season for Auburn, right? With the situation at hand with the quarterbacks that DJ Durkin did speak on today, which you have those quotes, and I'll let you read them in just a moment. The question is, and again, we want to hear from you. We got several people texting in. We're going to read, and we'd love to get your phone calls as well at 334-321-1390. What would you do? You are DJ Durkin. You are the interim head coach. You've got three quarterbacks at your disposal. You have two games left on the schedule and a red shirt to worry about, if you choose to worry about it, with Ashton Daniels. You have Jackson Arnold, Ashton Daniels, and Deuce Knight. You have Mercer next week and the Iron Bowl at home, and Ashton Daniels' red shirt, which is one game away from being burned. Two games away from being burned. He has one more game he can play without it going away.
Correct, yes.
Who do you start against Mercer, and who do you start in the Iron Bowl? Christian, you said, going to break, that you would start Deuce Knight against Mercer, and you would save Ashton Daniels for the Iron Bowl, secretly.
I guess, even if it's not Deuce, start one of the other two.
But don't start Ashton against Mercer.
Yeah.
Because of his red shirt.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody in our text box agrees with you. They said absolutely. They said that they agree with that. They said that's best for DJ Durkin, and it's best for Auburn if they make that decision. Says Deuce starts. Arnold is his backup for Mercer, using 3 weeks with Ashton Daniels versus Alabama.
Yeah.
Somebody else texted him, buddy of ours, and says, start Jackson Arnold against Mercer with Deuce waiting as the number two. And this is something I alluded to earlier, and I'm glad he got into it. Remember I said, how much do we know that Derek Nix had an input on choosing the starting quarterback of Jackson Arnold to start the season, right? And clearly, Derek Nix didn't have a whole lot to do with the lack of success of Jackson Arnold, right? This guy says, start Jackson Arnold with Deuce waiting in line for number two. With Derek Nix not burdened by Freeze's play calling, I think Jackson Arnold has success and beats Mercer, is what this texter says. If he struggles, you go with Deuce the rest of the way, and in the Iron Bowl, Ashton Daniels starts, and you have the other two at your availability.
What a fun conversation that could be here in 2 Mondays from now. Oh, Jackson Arnold goes 21 of 24, throws for 280, runs for 70 yards, and has 4 combined touchdowns. And I don't care who the defense is. It's just the fact of, oh, he dropped back and looked like a normal quarterback. Didn't look like he had 8 decisions in his mind, mm-hmm. or was being told to make 1 decision. Actually looked like a quarterback that was able to use athleticism and make plays. That goes to show you that every single finger can be pointed at one person.
Yeah.
And it was the offensive play caller.
And at that point, I don't even point the finger at Freeze anymore and kick that horse, right? I would more so just feel bad for Jackson Arnold. At that point, I would say, yeah, that sucks. I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
Somebody tweeted at us, Greg, who listens all the time, he tweeted at me and said, start Deuce versus Mercer, Ashton versus Bama, unless Deuce Knight absolutely lights it up. He says, Arnold, only as an emergency. Okay. He also says, if I'm John Cohen, I talk with Ashton Daniels, and I make the decision for DJ Durkin. That's an interesting thought. I don't know how realistic that would be for John Cohen to kind of overstep DJ Durkin and say, hey, we're going to take care of this young man. I would understand it, and I think a lot of people would probably be like, yeah, that probably makes sense. But that's, you're teetering a fine line there, I think, is overstepping as an athletic director. But there's another one that says Deuce versus Mercer and Ashton versus Bama.
I think people are in the same boat, and it's a conversation that, man, people aren't ready for, of what the future could look like for all three of these quarterbacks and what the roster looks like next year.
Yeah, and what that room could be a year from now. So more time to talk about that, though. We'll take a break, come back, and talk about the college football playoff rankings after this.
We're halfway through hour number 2. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, and we now get to the college football playoff rankings.
Before we do that, sorry to cut you off, did want to read the quote that DJ Durkin had about this entire conversation. Again, a really nice conversation that carried all of 30-plus minutes talking about what would you do in the scenario of Ashton Daniels, Deuce Knight, Jackson Arnold. Ashton can play one of the next 2 games and still redshirt. Deuce can redshirt if he played every game. And Jackson just being in that weird situation of getting the start, being the quarterback that the head coach, who is no longer the head coach for the one that he picked out. So 3 quarterbacks, 2 games, and a redshirt, that's on the line. And we had great fan interaction with the text box, giving their ideas, both agreeing and bringing up sub-points of what they would rather do. So a really good conversation that thankfully we have all of another week and a half to be able to discuss before we see who gets to take the field against Mercer at 1 o'clock inside Jordan-Hare. But DJ Durkin has obviously been asked that multiple times throughout the week as well, and on the SEC teleconference that he had earlier today, they asked him the question, and his response was, that has been a discussion and is still in a discussion There's no final decision yet. I know that's been brought up before. We will make a decision on that here in the near future. There are several things that we want to talk about and that we will consider. And so not giving any sort of leeway one way or the other, but at least going to show you that A, it's been acknowledged, B, there's already been conversations, and C, whether that becomes a public knowledge or whether that becomes a public standpoint of this is what we are going to do, this is not what we are going to do, or they keep it silent. At least it gives you some sort of confidence just knowing that he didn't feel fazed by the question, didn't feel unprepared for how to answer that, because obviously it's been something that's a major talking point around Auburn.
What a crazy idea to be prepared, for big questions.
For a question that you knew was going to be answered or asked. Yeah.
Wow. Who would have thunk? Huh? Who would have thunk that? Somebody says, I think that all three of those quarterbacks are going to leave next year anyway.
We talked about it over the break, how wild of a concept of all three staying.
Yeah. Because here's what's wild about it. Everything is on the table.
Every
option, every possibility.
Would you say it's on the line?
No. I'd say it's on the table. Yeah. Nice try, though. But I think that's true. I think it's true. All three staying, plus the freshman coming in, all three leaving, and the freshman decommitting, going to get a portal quarterback, going to get two portal quarterbacks, going and
bringing quarterback with the head coach.
Yeah. I mean, there's unlimited amount of options at the quarterback spot, but it's trying to figure out which one is the best for right now and which one is the quarterback of the future.
Is that Mr. Unlimited?
Mr. Unlimited.
No. Unlimited. Who just got benched to Jameis Winston while Jackson Dart is still out.
Singing from the play The Musical Manhattan during his press conference today because he's just a happy-go-lucky guy, man.
But not Mr. Unlimited.
He is unintentionally one of the funniest dudes in the NFL.
Russ or Jameis?
Jameis.
Okay.
Jameis.
Oh, 100%.
Russ kind of is too, believe it or not. He's just in a weird way. Him doing, his teammates talking about him doing stretches and stuff on the plane and him doing, I don't know.
He's got a way of going about it, and I'll give him credit for.
It was good for a long time.
Keeping it consistent.
Yeah.
Oh, but no.
But being benched for Jameis Winston.
But Jameis Winston is unintentionally the funniest person in the league and will make a fantastic color commentator when he retires.
Yeah. Better than Tom Brady.
Next question.
College football playoffs. Those rankings were released last night.
He's gotten better.
He has gotten better. I will agree with that. Nobody's more knowledgeable than
him. What I was about to say. He's almost dumbed down his knowledge to make it to where it's actually listenable.
Yeah.
You can sit down and be like, oh, okay, he's on the call.
Well, there's a difference between that and then like the Manning cast on ESPN Monday nights where they're like, when Peyton and Eli are going back and forth, hey, what did you guys call for this? And they just start throwing out Rainbow X, Jet Sweep. You know, they start throwing all these different terminologies out there. It's like, okay, you know that's what you're getting into. But for Tom Brady, it's like, brother, you're on the main Fox broadcast that everybody and the family is watching on a Sunday afternoon. You can't be throwing out terms like that because 90% of the people don't know what you're talking about.
Again, he's figured out how to put his thoughts into words. And so I'll give credit where it's due.
Yeah.
He's gotten a lot better.
Job. He has. And KB, Kevin Burkhardt's awesome.
He is.
I think he's one of the best in the game at play-by-play.
Jameis, will make a fantastic either analyst or announcer if that's what he so chooses
Dude,
to go into.
Put that man on a sideline report. Put that man with a microphone in his hand on the sideline. He would be
Put him
hilarious.
In a church somewhere.
Yeah. He's just funny, dude. He's just hilarious. And
you said he was singing
something.
Hamilton?
Was singing, maybe it was Hamilton. That or like Manhattan or something. I don't know. I just saw a clip of it during the break. He was singing. Here it is. Jameis Winston starts singing from Hamilton. Yeah, that's what it is. When talking about playing in New York. Singing, it's the
greatest
city
in
the
world.
Yeah.
Babe, did you hear that? You've never been prouder of me for knowing that song right there.
I don't know it. I don't know it. I'm sure she's listening. I'm sure she is.
Babe, what are your thoughts on the college football playoff rankings?
We asked her what time our show was the other day, and she almost got it right.
Did she not?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I put that on you, brother. I put that on you. That's your job, not mine.
Yeah, I don't know.
Anyways.
Ohio State's still the number one team in the country.
Yeah. There were no changes in the top five last night in the college football playoff rankings, even though some people tried to stir it up and say that A&M should or could jump Indiana.
My one prediction did happen, though.
Texas Tech.
Yeah, they jumped Ole Miss.
Yeah. Understandable.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not a huge fan of teams that didn't lose to get jumped, but I get it. I understand. I mean, it is what it is. Texas Tech jumps up two spots. Ole Miss falls a spot. Four teams move up. BYU plummets to five spots to 12.
I didn't say this yesterday, but I wanted to, and I was almost so sure of it. You knew they were going to move Texas into 10th.
Mm. Oh, because
to
of
make
the,
it
yeah.
To make it a top 10 matchup, Georgia and Texas. Because I think
Texas
was
predicted the Dodgers to win the World Series. I just didn't say it.
True.
Yeah.
That was a good pick, yeah.
I predicted Florida to win the basketball title last year. I just didn't say it.
That one not as good of a pick, but it ended up working out.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right, though. That's so crazy how they put Texas in the top 10 to just accidentally create a top 10 game between them and Georgia this weekend. And, oh, no, what channel's that game on? Oh, wow, that's on ABC. How crazy is that? That game this weekend on the largest sports network just happens to be on their channel.
And it's crazy that Notre Dame gets moved into the top 10.
I'm so mad. I'm mad that I was right about that. Tell me what Notre Dame has done, please.
I guess they were 10th last week. But
please tell me what Notre Dame has done. Why do they deserve to be a top 10 team? Why do they deserve...
Because they're going to go beat Pitt because they don't care about this game.
God. They're going to win just by showing up because Pitt won't show up.
No, their focus is fully on Notre Dame.
Yeah, for a game that doesn't matter,
yeah.
Apparently.
It's like Elko last year.
They have one win over a top 25 team, and it's USC at home. USC. Good job. Guess what? USC's 7-2, and they've got back-to-back games against top 25 teams that they'll lose one of. They won't even be ranked by the end of the season. We're really going to put Notre Dame in the playoff for beating USC and Pitt this weekend? Really? It's the same situation with the G5 stuff we talked about yesterday. Notre Dame is stealing a bid from somebody. They don't belong. They don't deserve it. But don't worry. They generate revenue, so we're going to put them in because that's what college football is about.
I don't know. I mean, they gave up 30 to Purdue, but still scored 56.
To the worst team in P4 football.
Hmm.
Whatever, man.
I don't know. It was a quality loss to Miami in week one.
I love a good quality loss. I love a good quality loss, man.
And then they handled business against Arkansas, who was really
good
at the time.
They got a coach fired, baby. Put that on the resume. They got Sam Pittman fired, did Notre Dame. It was after that game, right? I think it was.
It was,
yeah. Because that was bad.
Well, that decision was made at the end of the first quarter.
Yeah, that was bad. That being in Fayetteville was brutal.
I remember our buddy Ty sent us a picture of what it looked like at like the 12-minute mark in the second quarter.
It was empty.
It looked like you had 3 hours until kickoff.
It wasn't even full to start, and then it was just gone. And he talked about the idea that game had – I mean, that was one of the biggest opponents that they've had in Razorback Stadium ever. And he said, too, he was like, guys, Notre Dame's never coming back. Like, in his lifetime, our lifetime, that deal will never get done again.
No.
For Notre Dame to go to Fayetteville, Arkansas, and that's how bad it went. So, all that to say this – Notre Dame does not belong in the college football playoff. But I will cry until I die, and that'll never not happen. So
would they go 9-3 and make it?
Yes.
They would be the
– Yes.
They would find a way to be 12th, and they'd put the G5 team as 11th.
Something like that, yeah. If Notre Dame goes on the road and loses to Pittsburgh this weekend in a close game, they'll still find a way to get in.
Which is wild to think because Notre Dame would then get in not playing a conference game, and they'd probably be two SEC teams that went 9-3 that would get left out.
Correct. Notre Dame's the ultimate trump card. They get in over anybody.
Yeah.
If there's any, you know, tie goes to the runner, Notre Dame's the runner.
There is no tie.
Yeah. Push goes to, you know, 21 push goes to the dealer. Yeah. Notre Dame's a damn dealer. That's what happens here. Notre Dame's playing a rigged system. Notre Dame is the dealer in the casino, bro. They always win, and they always get their way. The odds are stacked against everyone else.
Notre Dame's like the quote from John Cohen, he is the committee.
They are.
Notre Dame is
the committee.
Is the committee.
It's ridiculous, man. Any other surprises for you in the college football playoff rankings last night, or have we learned what the committee's trying to do or what they're trying to tell us? I mean, I think our doomsday scenario for the SEC that we broke down yesterday seems to be well on its way. You start looking ahead just to kind of go further in this conversation before we get to break about what's coming up this weekend in terms of playoff implication games. Not a ton. Crazy enough, that Notre Dame-Pittsburgh game is one of the bigger ones because it's a top 25 game. Michigan still playing for their season. South Florida still playing for their season against Navy, who maybe trying to get back in it. I don't know. Oklahoma, Alabama, clearly a big one this weekend. 11 versus 4, that one in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, Oklahoma has to win that one, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too. You're already 7-2 with two losses in the SEC. I don't think you can afford another one. Iowa and USC, I think both of those teams are eliminated. Even if USC wins out, well, all right, if USC wins out, they've got a shot because they have Iowa this weekend and on the road at Oregon next weekend, wrapping up with UCLA.
Oh, if you see it, if USC wins out.
But who are they going to steal a bid from? Who are they going to take it from? An SEC team?
Probably.
To be the fourth Big Ten team? Because the three at the top of the Big Ten are in.
Yeah.
The question is, can the Big Ten get a fourth? It would either have to be Michigan or USC. I don't trust Michigan to make it happen, but.
And USC beat Michigan. So that would 100%, they would be the team that jumped them. Yeah, they killed Michigan.
Yeah, they did. 31-13. Yeah, sorry, Michigan. I was going to say, because they've got Northwestern, Maryland, and then a home game against Ohio State. If Michigan were to win out, they would have a say. But if USC wins out, then they would win that trump card. But here we go in the what-if game again. I don't trust USC to win out and be at the table. If Michigan wins out, they're 10-2 with a win over Ohio State.
Golly.
A win over Ohio State, you're 10-2. Your losses are at Oklahoma and at USC, and you hold one of the nation's best wins.
They need that not to happen. The committee standpoints.
You have to put them in, do you not?
Otherwise, I think right now you're stealing an outside bid from the SEC and you're stealing one from the ACC. I think that's where you look at it, because it's Miami and Georgia Tech who are 15-16, Virginia and Louisville who are 19-20. I don't think three of those teams get in.
Well, I think the terminology here is the SEC has bids to lose, right?
Sure, yeah.
The ACC is trying to fight for a bid here and there. You could take one from them, because that's the proper way to say it, because they don't deserve it. The SEC could get some bids stolen from them.
I think
that's the
difference. I think the way you look at it right now is the SEC has five, and they can get one stolen from them to only have four.
Yeah.
Because then it would be A&M, Alabama, Georgia, Ole Miss, and then you have Texas, Oklahoma, and Vanderbilt as those kind of three teams that want to have a say. This weekend could obviously change a lot of that, but if Oklahoma beats Alabama and Texas beats Georgia, then all of a sudden both of those teams are 8-2. Texas has the win over Oklahoma, and one of Texas's losses was in week one, a 14-7 loss in Columbus. Chaos is going to go absolutely insane.
Sounds like somebody's going to get left out and not be happy about it.
No.
Is there a way to fix that?
I don't think that's the case, because when it was two, teams were happy. When it was four, everybody was happy. And now when it's 12, everybody's going to be happy. So there's no need to go to 16 or 24 or 76 or anything like that. We don't need to make it look like March Madness, because then people would be upset.
Anti-expansionist over there. How dare you not be for progress, Christian?
Is that what we call it now? Progress?
Something like that. That's what the purist would say. We'll leave it at that. We'll take a break.
Am I an anti-purist then?
Are we both?
That's a conversation for another day.
All right, we got to get to break. We'll be back and wrap up the Wednesday edition of On the Line right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a great show today, man. If you missed any of it, you can go and check out the podcast version of the show on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
If you missed any of today's show, you can go.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah. You know what? No, if you missed it,
bad pause for effect.
Yeah, if you missed it, get out. That's yeah. Yeah, if you missed it, you suck and get out. No, I'm just kidding. If you missed it, you can go to our station website at ESPNAU.com and our podcast center and check it out as we post the show audio for you every single day. Also on our station website, there's a ton on there. We post all of our high school broadcasts, all of our football, basketball, baseball, softball games. And so if that is something you would like to do and want to go back and check those out, you can certainly do that on the Lee Scott Sports Network and Auburn High Sports Network. Also, our playoff brackets are on there for 3A and 7A. We'll talk more about that tomorrow because some programming notes, okay, here on the way out. Tomorrow is Thursday. I know, crazy stuff, crazy information, but in case you haven't looked at a calendar, the drive's coming up here in the next 2 hours. Tomorrow is Thursday. No Max Roundtable here on ESPN because Auburn Women's Basketball is having a early morning game. They start at 11 a.m. over at Neville Arena. Our buddy Britt Bowen will be on the call. Carson Meyer will be in the studio running it right here on ESPN 106.7. So broadcast time is 10:45 tomorrow morning with tip-off set for 11 a.m. So, no Max Roundtable. They should be done, okay? The game should be done by the time we are going on the air. If for whatever reason it's not, we will go on the air as soon as that game is over, okay? But I would assume that that game would be done and the broadcast wrapped up by the time the 2 o'clock hour rolls around tomorrow. So we're on the air, okay? A jam-packed show. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, Coach Keith Etheridge of Auburn High School Football, and Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC. Okay, that's tomorrow for us. And then we're done for the week. On the Line is done after tomorrow for the week because you and I, Christian, are both on the road for high school playoff football. And it just works out best for us to not do a show on Friday. Going into the bye week, it seemed to be an okay time to make that call. So no On the Line on Friday, but we are back tomorrow after the Auburn women's basketball game here on ESPN and the drive's on the air the rest of the week. So that's kind of your programming notes. So we will be back tomorrow. Again, Auburn women's basketball right here starts at 10:45 a.m. with tip-off at 11, and then we'll come on after that at our normal time at 2 o'clock or whenever the game is over. So that'll be tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Stick around. The drive's coming up, and then we're back tomorrow for a normal show and off on Friday. So until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.